This is Armand DeMille with you with The Private of Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. With you for 2 hours today, a two-hour special. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, associates, help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me today, Julian Joiello, who is my cousin and engineer who has helped me put together a lot of the programs that you've been hearing recently, because we've had an unusual way of delivering them. We're not live yet at the studio because the studio has moved. We're bringing you original programming about certain things that I've observed over the last few months, and I haven't had the time to really present it to you here today. I want to bring you some ideas, some ways of looking at things. I want to talk about bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder, which is mood disorder, I see it differently, and I see it differently than most people do, and a lot of research has been coming out about it. I also want to talk about dementia, Alzheimer's. We'll talk about that first, actually. A recent article in the New York Times asked the question, does depression contribute to dementia? A large body of research linked late-life depression to social isolation, poorer health, and an increase of death. A recent article in the New York Times asks the question about does depression contribute to dementia? Now, this means that if you know somebody who is older, or if you are somebody who is older at a certain point, late life, what that means probably over 60, depression, which manifests in social isolation, poorer health, leads to, we know, an increased risk of death. People die sooner. Who blames them? You don't feel good. Now, a new study finds that depression is associated with subsequent vascular dementia and Alzheimer's disease, conditions poised to expand dramatically with the aging population. We have more people out there with Alzheimer's than you could imagine, but I have a different perception about Alzheimer's that I'm going to tell you about. But let me get you to this part about the depression. In the British Journal of Psychiatry, in a meta-analysis of 23 previous studies that followed 50,000 older adults over a median of 5 years, the research has found that depressed older adults, those were over age 50, more than twice as likely to develop vascular dementia and 65% more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. We can't say that late-life depression causes dementia, but we could say that depression is toxic to the brain. We've learned that chemically, it will add to a degenerative process. Being depressed not only slows you down, slows down your metabolism, slows down a lot of stuff, and it's an easier way out. So there can't be a causal relationship between the two, but about 20% of the people with dementia in the United States are thought to have the vascular form of the condition. And the vascular form of the condition seems directly linked to the hormone producing high levels of the hormone cortisol, which in turn has an adverse effect on the hippocampus, a part of the brain responsible for new learning and short-term memory. So you got a hippocampus. Your hippocampus is very important. The cortisol has this deleterious effect on it. And and there goes your memory. And there goes your new learning. So one of the things they try to do with people who have Alzheimer's is give them new learning. But that doesn't work as well. One of the things we have found is give them music. Put an iPod on their head and play some of their familiar music. Give them drumsticks in their hands and have them play music, and things start coming back. But mainly what's coming back is, again, activating the hippocampus. New learning. Music is working into recall. And now you'll see singing. They start singing, and they start singing along with the music they're hearing. It's a magical thing. It requires earphones. You have to have something directly in your ears, and you have to And it has to be music that is piped directly in, not in the background. There is also chronic inflammatory changes that are a common feature of depression, and they could predispose depressed people to neurodegenerative diseases later in life. Some experts hypothesize that depression may share genetic underpinnings with dementia. They might be coming from the same neighborhood. So if you're depressed early on in life, you know, maybe you're going to be likely getting this later in life. I have questions about all that. There's one thing for sure. If you treat depression when it appears, if that means you go to counseling and you get your way out of it, because I know counseling helps with that kind of depression, especially the aging depression. A person gets older, they don't have contact. They have contact with their families, but it's in such a miserable way. You know, the people are taking care of them, they're worried about them. And you could watch that by having some contact with that person of a decent kind, they become alert again. They come back, they pick up. So depression is not something to be just passed over. As people get older, you almost want to leave them depressed so they don't bother you. They're sitting alone in their room, they're watching TV, they're doing nothing. They become less bothersome if they're depressed. However, if you care about the person, pull them out of that depression, bring them somewhere where they can talk to somebody. It's so hard when you have depressed older people even to get them to go to bingo clubs. You know, they don't want to go out. They want to stay. They become more and more isolated. But it's also a way into that other zone. We're going to talk about that other zone, which I call the Alzheimer's zone, because I have some radical ideas about it. So I'm saying to you that if you notice depression in the elderly, do something. If you're depressed and you're elderly, do something. Don't just sit there.
So my grandmother actually is in a home right now, and she's we think she's depressed, let's say, but we don't know because she seems happy, or she just would enjoy watching TV constantly, and that's basically it. So how do you know
if that's your grandmother's my aunt? Isn't she? She's my aunt once removed.
Maybe.
Barbara.
Yeah.
Barbara, right, of course, Barbara. So Barbara's in a home. She's in a hospital.
Yeah.
And she's in a home now. Does she have Alzheimer's? Does she have loss of brain function?
I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah, I think it might
Does she have gaps in her thinking?
There. Starting to get there. And
okay.
I think it's the... It's the use of the drugs that she's taking at the home, I think, a lot.
That are making her feel better?
Seems like it's changed her, yeah.
Yeah, so that's hard to tell, Julian. It's hard to tell when the drugs are having the effect or she's... Now, I know that she has been under the attention of some considerable people, including my sister, mm-hmm. who knows this stuff.
Yeah.
So before Barbara was brought off to a home, how old is she now?
She's going to be turning 82.
82 years old, yeah. Before she was brought to a home, they kind of looked at her really closely, and they tried to see if there was something they could do, and she was really depressed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So by bringing her to one of these places where she's getting medication and she seems more jovial, mm-hmm. all right, that's treating it. And maybe it will postpone this, but that's mm-hmm. one of the things that people do. Most of the depression yields if you have the attention. But she was isolated. She was living all the way down there in Florida somewhere, and she didn't have people really coming in who could do this with her. You know, so that's what they use the homes for. If the homes are good, then they somehow, even through the communal living, through being with each other.
Just being next to another.
Being next to other humans, you know, mm-hmm. who may be somewhat sympathetic and mm-hmm. empathetic, and they might also be fun to play with.
Yeah.
So I hope Barbara gets better. I'll look in myself. That's Julian Joiello, who I happen to have with me, who's my cousin, but is a magician. So let me look at Alzheimer's a different way. Now, this is a crazy thing. Let me see. I know I'm probably going to get letters on this one, but I have a good friend, a man who I've known for many years, and I have such respect for him. He was like a cross between Gandhi and Sylvester Stallone. He was like this powerhouse of a spiritual man. He had so much essence that he let himself dip into his feelings with impunity. He would go in there and he would not be afraid to feel anything. A man who was a therapist, many people who are listening know who I'm talking about. He was a therapist, and he was a great therapist, wonderful. But slowly he started losing track of things, and slowly you could see little gaps in his mind. In the last year that he worked with me, he started losing, and he was just saying, there would be blank stares, and his clients would mention it to him, you know? And he was aiming towards dementia. Now, this happened to have followed the death of his mother, which may have triggered something. But he's a 60-year-old guy, and slowly he starts losing it. So he left the city, went up to Vermont to live there, and where he has a home and he has enough to get by on. And he's up there, and then he calls me the other day, and he says, "Well, Armand," he says, "such fond memories between the two of us, but I'm losing it. I'm losing my memory. I'm going, and I could tell it's happening to me. I've been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, early Alzheimer's," he said, "and it's happening, and I'm going through this." So, of course, we many of us grieved. Oh, poor guy. But then I thought to myself, as I was speaking to someone who we had in common, I said, you know, this is no ordinary man. This man, John, who I'm going to call him, he was never an ordinary guy. I wonder what his Alzheimer's is going to be like. So then I took that a step further, and I thought about it, and I said, okay, imagine I, Armand, were in a coma. Now, I've had such an enjoyable life of exploring life. Let's say something happened to me and I was in a coma. Please don't disconnect me, because I would find a coma fascinating. I would find a coma something where I would be, my mind is free of my body. And what's going to go on in that existence? Equally, I find death potentially exciting. What's going to happen there? Aren't you curious? Is it the end all of everything? Do I turn into bird food? I don't know what happens. But I'm curious about this thing, about what would happen in a coma. So I'm laying there, and I've got everything functioning, and my body, I'm completely free of my body attention. What happens to my mind? Do I drift through space? Do I think nothing and feel nothing? Am I part of the universal everything? It would be fascinating. It would be a stage. It would be a thing I'm going through, because it's our mind going through it. Because I've never been static. And if it is nothing, I've never had nothing. That would be a different kind of fascinating. Imagine nothing. No thing. Wow, I could hang out in that for a long while. So now I'll take it back to my friend John and his Alzheimer's. He is such an extraordinary man that his Alzheimer's is not going to be ordinary. It's going to be unusual. Now, Alzheimer's and dementia are very hard on the family. You have a family of people around. Everybody's begging, please recognize me, recognize me. Tell me who I am. Tell me you're happy. Alzheimer's also has at its very beginning paranoia, anxiety, worry. So they look unhappy. They look nervous. They fear afraid they're going to fall down. They're afraid of shadows. They lose function sometimes of their bodies. They have to wear diapers. But imagine being free enough to wear a diaper. Imagine having somebody clean you. Now, I'm not talking like a baby. Imagine being free of your shell in such a way that your mind can do whatever it wants, including nothing. The people who I know who have dementia and Alzheimer's are generally not unhappy people. It's the people around them that are unhappy. So this is a curse for the people who are around, because it's not like somebody died and then they're dead and then, you know, you grieve them. They're in that physical body, but they're not there. And they keep saying things like, I want to go home. So you try to take them to their home, or you show them pictures of their house, but that's not the home they're talking about. They're talking about a bigger home. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm saying I want to reframe this whole idea, because even in depression that we talked about a little earlier, there's a wisdom that comes that should not be ignored. And in Alzheimer's and in other conditions, dementia, even vascular dementia, or in physical illness, or in death, or in cancer, there's something that happens to you that is a change. And the change, if you're not in pain, if you're not living miserably, if you're not going through excruciating stuff, could be wonderful. Now, I'm going to kneel at John's feet. I'm going to find this man when he's in a later stage of this, if it ever happens. And I'm going to be like I was with many people who died. I'm going to be saying, all right, give me whatever you got. Let me hear what you have to say. Tap your feet, do anything, or just stare off into space. Let me learn about you, the way you are now. Because I'm sure each transition that we go through has a marvel in itself, if we allow that marvel to be and we don't live in the regret of what we once had. Beautiful thing about Alzheimer's, there are no regrets about what you once had. You're free. In fact, in a very funny way, this may be one of those little gifts that came by. They used to take you when you were, you know, you got older in life and you had no more semen or eggs. They put you out onto the ice and they say, goodbye, Grandpa. You know, and they just, you know, walk out onto the ice and you're gone. Well, that's cold. You know, it hurts your feet. This may be our way of going out onto the ice. So, just one of my perceptions that have been burning inside my soul is I have many more to bring to you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're here with you today for 2 hours, and we're here because we are bringing you some concepts that you may not have entertained and some thoughts that I think would be useful for you, as this Positive Mind radio program has done for many years, 30 years with you. Archives available for free, not archives we sell, on the website thepositivemind.com, distributed all over the world. I hear from countries and cities that are telling us that it's made a major difference in their life, influences. Because of the work that you've done, you've encouraged, you've sponsored, I may be the vehicle, but I do it with a support staff that's just absolutely beautiful, and we've been able to make a difference in this world. That's a wonderful feeling, making a difference in this world. WBAI makes a difference in this world. I don't know about the rest of you. I listen to Amy Goodman's broadcasts, and I listen with humility. She does things that is so courageous. She challenges. She does. I've known Amy for as long as I've been around here. And I listen to other programmers who do work, and I think the Hugh Hamiltons and the just fabulous stuff. You know, I used to admire so much the work that the different artists, producers have done. I've admired the work of Majida Lee, Gary Null. Admire what they dare bring. Only WBAI will allow this. And WBAI is somehow X-ing itself or getting X'd out of the picture. Somehow we can't keep ahead of the game as we always did. We have in the past. For many years, for over 50 years, we've been able to get everything to work. Now, suddenly, it's almost impossible. I don't know what's making it so impossible, but we can't even meet salaries at times. And this is pretty dismal for a lot of those beautiful people who worked there. So we had a fun drive, and the big deal about the past fun drive was we had this antenna that we had to keep up at the Empire State Building. And so we met our bills, and we pulled in the money, and you guys helped us, and we raised the antenna, and we're broadcasting from there. But still, even now, we're still behind in the bills. The fund drive, this fund drive, has to be successful. Now, of course, you've given, and you've given, and you've given, and some of you have given in excess. I've seen a lot of money coming in. So what are we going to do? The best I could do is offer myself. I offer my body, I offer my mind, I offer myself to you, and I say, okay, here's what I'll give you. If there's something about this program that you like, you probably like how smart you think I am, how mystical you think I am, how perceptive and kind I am. Well, I'm not as smart as you think, and I'm not as perceptive as you think, and I'm not as mystical as you think, but I am nice. If you would donate to the station $200, you will get a chance to meet with me personally or talk to me on the phone about anything you want to talk about. And so far, I haven't run into a subject I know nothing about. Somehow, by you asking the question, I could dissect that question in such a way that I could get an understanding to it that you may not be able to get. So a short while ago, a young man asked me a question. He said to me, I lied to my girlfriend. I lied to my girlfriend. I don't like lying to my girlfriend, but I lied to her about a picture she saw of me with somebody else because, and he says, I don't know, and I lied to her for a full hour. And he said, help me with this. What am I going to do? And I said to him, why did you lie? He said, I don't know. I just didn't want to tell her. I said, were you trying to control her feelings? And that's usually the reason why people lie, because they want to control the feelings of the other person. They don't want them to feel something. So if somebody says to you, like if your mother says to you, did you steal my dollar? No, Ma, I didn't steal your dollar, because you don't want her to get angry. You don't want them to feel something. But the young man who asked me about it, I said, well, did you do anything that you really were you flirting or cheating? He said, no. He said, however, I was afraid she was going to get jealous. And I said, have you had history with her being jealous in the past? He said, yes. And it was very uncomfortable. So when I suggested to him, good, then what we need to do is for you to be able to tell her that your primary fear is that she would get jealous and you didn't want to put that distance between us, between you. And so you went to a characteristic way of dealing with problems as you did when you were a kid. You lied. And you denied, and you denied long enough until you got over it, and then you realize that you loved her so much you don't want to do that. And so you go back to her and tell her the truth. And that this will be a pattern that you will use with her because you want to be different. She'll love him more for that. I mean, she won't punish him. So this is a thing we don't think of. We don't think of the peace in the middle. What do we do during a consultation? You come to me, present me with some issue. I will find you the pieces in the middle. I will find you that angle to look at. I will find you that something to do. 212-757-4488 is our number here. 212-757-4488. We're taking the calls right here as opposed to at a call center because I believe I have my people who are standing by ready to answer the phones. And if we're going to make these donations possible, and we're going to make this happen. I want to have the people who are answering the phone who can take your calls and they know all about our system. 212-757-4488. That's the office of that's the number of my office. And it is our people who are standing by. You'll hear Jamie Ross. You'll hear Marty Resnick. You'll hear Teresa Palmer. A number of people who will be answering these calls. Lisa Arnone. We'll be taking these calls just to help you out and to get this through, 212-757-4488. Now, for this, you get a number of things. You'll get a one-time meeting with me. You will get a surprise choice of book We have a thing. We have a library full of books that were donated to me, given to me by people who want to get on the air, you know, and they give us books and we look through them. Some people get on the air, some don't. We have those books available like a library. You could pick a book. You'll take a choice of your own book. They're out in the waiting room. You'll take a choice. You'll have that book as well. That's a little bonus. An additional bonus is going to be when you come in, I'm going to give you a copy of a CD of music that I'm going to create for you. I'm going to put together something. It'll be either jazz or a combination of things. But you're going to hear some music. And you know me and my music. So we've got a number of things being offered. $200 you get, but the main thing you're going to get is a consultation with me and then goodies when you walk in the door. 212-757-4488. Now let me talk to the people who have donated in the past. We did a fund drive a couple of months ago, and a couple of months ago we offered some CDs. We offered Hate, the one about hatred, the feeling of hatred, and we offered Human Sexuality, two different CD sets. Because of something that took place with WBAI, the addresses of the donors can't be sorted out yet because BAI went into a major move at that period of time. All you have to do is call my office, tell them you donated in the last fund drive, and we will send you the CDs. That's all. We just send them to you. That's it. We have them here. They're ready to package. We have your name, but we don't have the addresses. So call, say you made the donation. We'll check off your name. Boom, we'll mail it out to you ourselves. My apologies. It took too long. I usually do not leave it up to WBAI to deliver premiums. I like to deliver them myself. As far as the consultation goes, that's a real easy one because I could deliver that right here. So if you have not had the consultation call, we thought we called everybody and offered them a consultation, but if you haven't gotten it from a previous call, call our office now, 212-757-4488. Say, I donated during the last fund drive. We'll find your name, and boom, we'll give you an appointment right away. 212-757-4488. We are going to offer an additional premium today, a new one. We're going to register it. This one is called Emotional Fragility. I'm going to put together three CDs for a donation of $100. And these three CDs are going to contain information about tricky memories, memories that kind of send you off to the edges sometimes, how you could shed the past, talk about the nature of crying, the nature of being ostracized. I'm going to talk about bipolarity, which I'll be talking about later in this program as well. I'm going to talk about manic love, powerlessness, managing chronic pain, emotions that you hate, what makes violence, social fears. All of these are going to be combined into a three CD set. They're going to be jammed together. We're going to take pieces of information like we're doing today. I'm going to just shove them all together next to each other, and you'll learn about many different subjects. There might be a nice gift for you to give to people. 212-757-4488. The three CDs called Emotional Fragility, which you get right here. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. You can make a donation with MasterCard, Visa, American Express. You can give us promissory notes, you know, but the trouble with those is rather than, unless you don't have a credit card, it's just so much easier for us if we get the credit card stamp right away. Then that money gets immediately applied. Whereas if you're going to send a check, we'll handle that as well. 212-757-4488. We both been sound asleep. Wake up, please, Susie, and weep.
listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Jamil on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
Talk about bipolar disorder and manic depressive illness and mood swings. Now, I'm going to give you definitions that are definitions that come from me that are not just the technical definitions. It's the way I see it. Mood swings. Mood swings, we all know what that means. That means your attitude, your could be negative, positive, shifting from one to the other. We all have mood swings. Sometimes the mood swings are more dramatic than other times. There's a condition called bipolar disorder. They have it defined as bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. And in the definitions, one is more serious than the other. Kind of, some of the most common form of bipolarity that we see is in manic depressive illness, you see manic people. The reason I say we see is because it's most of our entertainers. You see, most of the entertainers that are up there that are trying to get you, put on a show for you, have to effuse energy. You've got to put energy out there, you know. People buy energy. The audience buys energy. They don't buy passive ways. They don't buy the, you know, if you're nice, calm, and you get on there and say, let me show you how to meditate. Nobody cares. You're draining energy. What they want is for you to effuse, put out energy, because I, listening in the audience, am depressed. And my depression gets lifted by your giving me some energy. Tell me something funny, tell me a joke, show me something shocking, do a dance, let me watch, show me a sport, show me something that activates my body, show me, you know, I'll watch football and make believe I'm hitting, or I'll play tennis. By watching tennis, pull me out of my doldrum, pull me out of my boredom, pull me out of my state of just being here. So most people are attracted to a manic display. Now, why do we say manic? Because if you look at the person who's on stage, and this could be anybody, Jon Stewart, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he's manic depressive, but when you see the energy and you see this constant energy being present there, it's what you're responding to. So I'm going to call this manic energy for a reason that there's a little bit of a frenzy behind it, a little bit of an activity. You could see this mostly in, this is very evident in someone like Robin Williams. Robin Williams, who says that he takes medication for manic depressive illness, when he's in his manic phase, he's like uncontrollable. People kind of like it. It's like the guy who smashes pumpkins, you know. It's like, oh, this is cute. This is wonderful. They kind of like it because the energy is effusive. So we have a place for manic people. You know who else loves manic people? Stores. Because manic people shop like crazy. Without consequence. They want to buy things. They want to accumulate things. They shop online. Manic is energetic. And manic is wonderful. It feels wonderful. Have you ever had a situation for which you've had to take prednisone or steroids? And you feel this incredible, intense top of your game? Feeling that kind of thing. Or did you ever run a race and after working out for such a long period of time, you feel this high, this incredible high? You don't want anyone to bring you down? That's the manic energy. When you're up there and you're afraid to be brought down, that's the manic energy. Now, of course, if it's part of a cycle, a cyclic thing where you become hyper manic, and then when you get off it, you get depressed. You slide all the way down to depression. That's called the manic depressive cycle. What's wrong with that is that the depression is so bad. In some people, you could become psychotic. You could sink into such a bad depression that you could actually start imagining and hallucinating. And now you're hallucinating, so you have two disorders. You have two things going on. This depression that is part of the manic depressive depression is so bad that it's dangerous. You got to pull a person out of that. Now, what they do is they've kind of figured out two things about this. Number one, mostly it's chemical. Clearly it's chemical because your mind is swinging. It's serotonin. It's all the other dopamine. It's everything is sliding one way or another in your brain, and you're having a chemical reaction. Now, you could say it's psychological and therefore not chemical, but it would be both, because even psychological is chemical. For example, right now, if you're feeling calm, if you close your eyes and you just relax for a minute, you change your chemistry. Watch, I'll change your chemistry for you. Right now, as you're there, you can take a moment and just reflect. A deep exhale. Now, you think you're doing something psychological, but what you're doing is changing the chemistry of your body. See, now your chemistry is just kind of sliding off. So as I lower my voice, you become less excited. Now watch, I'm going to speed up my voice again, and I'm going to talk to you a little faster, and you're going to feel yourself becoming more alert. That's all chemical. So, since we are treating a chemical reaction, the world feels justified in saying, well, then we'll give them chemicals to make them better. They discovered lithium. Lithium was one of the first drugs ever used for manic depressive illness. Oh, by the way, why treat it? The main thing we're concerned about is the depression. Nobody gets really concerned about the mania, because it's convenient for everybody, but I would be concerned about that. But the reason that they treat the depression is because the depression just keeps digging in further and further and further, and you could wind up being hospitalized from it. So we want to treat it, and the way they treat it is they give you lithium. Now, what lithium does originally was it had been thought that it separates the two sides of the brain so that the transfer from one side to the other is not as rapid. It slows down the transmission across the corpus callosum. I don't think that that's really what it does. You know, lithium, by the way, there's a high level of lithium in certain of the effervescent drinks like Avian, or, you know, the ones that you buy, Perrier, high levels of lithium. No wonder people like Perrier so much. You know, it's kind of has a calming effect. But lithium is a salt, and you take a lot of it. It does contaminate the body in its own way. But they don't treat with just lithium alone, because that never really worked. Now they give you lithium plus the SSRIs. The serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Now we're really chemicaling you out, and they do it in high, high doses. Now you go from being depressed to being undepressed but numb. And that's the treatment. And the treatment is we're going to bring you up to Numbville from Depressedville, and hopefully from Numbville we're going to reduce your medication and you're going to be living in Normalville for a while, but it's very, very difficult. If you take somebody who is manic and you try to treat them then, you would take them off their high and you would say to them, look, you're so high and you're so excited. Let's give you this medication to bring you down. Who would want that? So part of what we're looking at is the resistance to treatment. Now, I have a third way, which is I believe that a treatment in the middle of this, a recognition of the ailment and being able to see it and then being treated for it, two ways. When in the depression, we have a way of taking a person out of depression chemically without chemicals. And that's done through a process called the intense feeling process. We activate your body. We get you into feeling deep feelings. And we remove you out of that depression and you activate your own body. That's one. The other is when you're super manic, to convince you to make a contract and say, look, this is the high place. But from the high place, let me move you down, because the same thing happens in the manic phase that happens in the depressed phase. It's the avoidance of feelings. When you're manic, you can't feel anything, really. I mean, you feel happy all the time, but you can't feel anything. When you're depressed, you can't feel anything. So this is all about the avoidance of feelings. The nuance of feelings, the feelings in the middle, sadness, loss, grief, those feelings that people don't want to feel, so they avoid them. So the manic depressive illness, I believe, needs another look. And I think there is treatment for it, and I think it's treatment that could be done early on as opposed to much later on. And it's for you to recognize that there is a person there who doesn't have any will to change once they're in their manic phase, but when they're depressed, they're desperate. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, 212-757-4488. We offered you a premium. Part of the premium is called the Fragility, the Emotionally Fragile Mind. And this is a premium. We're offering three CDs for $100, one of which will focus on this mood disorder called bipolar disorder. It's, again, it's something we don't really understand. We don't know why it takes place. We don't know why so many people have it. But you could recognize it. You could see it. There are things that I would like to see more of. That's the advantage of having been through this for a long time. You see people being pieced together by doctors and by drugs. But once they get pieced together again, who are they? Who is this person who's got this crazy glue, you know, which is what I think it really is, trying to bring you back from insanity to sanity through some form? We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
Your mind is a beautiful piece of engineering. It's been said that if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got. Here's a chance to learn new ways to be with people and to be with yourself as well. Tune into The Positive Mind, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. It's knowledge from the heart, my friends.
My spot right here on 57th Street. We're right here on 57th Street. You come in to meet with me. It's really a nice thing. I love to meet you folks. You know, I mean, I really, it's such a pleasure. When you walk into my office, you walk in and you're seeing the guy you've listened to on radio for so long, but I'm seeing the ears that have listened to me. You know, and my greeting is so warm. I feel so warm towards you. Now, of course, you may want to come in to discuss a serious problem. You may be depressed. You may feel suicidal. You may feel homicidal. You may feel any number of things. You may want to come in with your mate. I had a couple, young couple walk in today. Beautiful, beautiful people. But at odds with each other, looking like they have to break up. I've had individuals come in mostly, you know, mostly. There's a large number of men have been coming in to see me. And I like that a lot because men are asking questions about themselves. And they're not asking questions about how do I become more sensitive because my wife wants me to be, how do I be this. They come in saying, why am I not happy? That's a really big question. Why are you not okay? Why are you trudging through the day half dead, you know, numb? So these are questions that are really worth asking yourself, because if you don't ask yourself now, you know, you just get more and more dug in, and you get a little sillier and sillier as life goes on, and you become numb. So before you do, while you're still young enough to smell the flowers and taste the garlic, that's an Italian speaking. You may want to make your changes now. You may want to look at yourself. I've been seeing a lot of men recently, and a lot of men come to see me, and men historically do not go into therapy, but men have been responding. I run a men's group. I wish I ran more, but I don't have the time to do it. The men are terrific. The men in this men's group, I could cite every one of them, are such beautiful guys. I get a chance to meet with them just every other week. Great guys, great guys. All of you listening, by the way, every one of you listening to this program who are one of the men that I've worked with, I'd like you to make sure you call in and make this donation to the station. Just show your gratitude as well. 212-757-4488. To the men out there, I'm asking you for support. Give me a little something. 212-757-4488. I also see couples. And couples are, as I said, they come in and they have this kind of confusion. Why can't we get together? I remind them that they've probably lost, every time they come in, is that they've lost their friendship. See, they're a couple, they're married, they're husband and wife, they're fathers and daughters, and fathers and mothers, but they lose their friendship. And somehow you lose that friendship, and I get them to reconnect with the basic friendship behind it. Once you reconnect with your friendship, remember I said that young man who told me the story about he lied to his girlfriend? She was no longer his friend at that point, because he wouldn't lie to his buddy. See? Losing that friendship is such an essential part. So we've got to be able to get that back. And I help people, if they can, recover it. Now, sometimes a person is such a bad friend to themselves that they can't discover the friendship with their partners. In that case, you got to do some individual work. Got to find out how to become a friend to yourself. And we do that all. That'll cover all of that with you when you come in and see me. We get a half hour of actual FaceTime. I stretch it whenever I can. There is some stuff that you do before when you come in. I'll ask you to send me an email in advance to outline what you want to speak about. So I spend my time reading the emails, and I take a look at that, and then you even take a small, you come here and there's a word analysis test, which I like a lot to work with. If you want, you could go online and take the Enneagram test at the EnneagramInstitute.com, and you could take that and send it to me, and I will analyze all of that with you when I meet with you. It's a lot of stuff you get. $200 donation, 212-757-4488. Use it now or use it in the future. Buy it like mental health insurance or give it to somebody you know. You know somebody who's upset? Send them my way. I'm good with upset people. 212-757-4488. I don't know, but you'll be hearing from Jamie Roth shortly, who is my office manager. I don't know of anyone who's ever walked out of here and said, what a waste of time. I mean, they must have, but I don't know of anyone. You know, I mean, somebody must have said that somewhere. Someone may have been offended by my telling them the truth, but I'm just going to tell you the truth of what I see. Some people don't want to hear it. I fully understand, but I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to give you exactly what I got because I'm an advisor. I am being a consultant. And what I'm doing and being the consultant is giving you straight information. I'm not going to just pull punches. I'm going to be nice and loving and caring. But I'm going to tell you what I think and what I see. And it comes from a valuable source, a well-educated source who's had a lot of life experience. 212-757-4488. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're offering you two premiums. One premium is for a donation of $200. You can get the one-time meeting with me, very worthwhile, with selected goodies coming along the way. I will give you as you come in. You'll get some music and you'll get some books and other things. But the premium is the meeting with me. Come in and meet with me, or we'll do it by phone. You do it by phone, you don't get the goodies because we're not mailing anything. However, we are mailing the premiums of emotional fragility. That's another premium. That's three CDs for $100. It's called Emotional Fragility. We are going to offer it directly here from my office. It's going to go out to you within 2 weeks because I know I'm going to be busy that first week. 212-757-4488, a one-time meeting with me, or you can get Emotional Fragility, three CDs, for $100. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here with you for the full 2 hours today, from 1 to 3 o'clock today. Trying to bring you ideas, concepts, guests, stuff that you don't think about normally, but all related to mental health and trying to live a more healthy life.
Lavender's blue, dilly dilly, lavender's green. If I were king, dilly dilly, I'd need a queen. Who told me so, dilly dilly, who told me so? I told myself, dilly dilly, I told me so. If your dilly dilly heart feels a dilly dilly way, and if you answer yes, in the pretty little church on the dilly dilly day, you'll be wed in the dilly dilly dress of lavender blue, dilly dilly, lavender green. Then I'll be king, dilly dilly, and you'll be my queen.
This is Jamie Ross. I'm the office manager at the DeMille Center. I've known Armand DeMille for over 30 years. I'm proud to be working here with him and his team. I've seen clients who've entered the center and after one meeting have found hope and a new sense of direction, while before their challenges might have felt insurmountable. We do good work here, and although Armand will deny it, he is a magician. Support The Positive Mind and WBAI by donating $200 to take advantage of this consultation offer. Call 212-757-4488, 212-757-4488. We have people standing by, and if the lines are busy, please call back, 212-757-4488. This is Jamie Ross.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Let's talk about people. There is a number of people out there in this world who are incapable of getting the services they need, the things they need. Now, social workers, of which I am one among my many degrees, were known to be the kind of person that goes and does work for you and arranges things for you, but social work has kind of changed. It's gotten to be specialized. But they don't as much do the connections. I want to start a profession. I want to start a profession, and you're the first people to hear about it. It's going to be a different form of medical social work. This is going to be being a patient advocate. I think people need advocates. I need patients need advocates. Certainly you need an advocate with your insurance company, right? You have an insurance company, you're trying to negotiate with them. You need somebody to interfere for you, and there are people who are specialists in that. Sometimes you need a lawyer to deal with your insurance companies and your medical needs. What miserable things, a lawyer for $400 an hour that you have to hire to get you your Medicare claim and your Medicaid claims. Then there's a simple thing of you have a simple thing in your body. You have something like somebody I know has a tumor. And she has a tumor and she's got to get the tumor removed. And so she went to Johns Hopkins, the best tumor remover of this pituitary tumor in the world, and spent days trying to get them to respond, to give her things that she could do, that she should be able to make the appointments. So I turned her over to one of my patient advocates. And there's a woman here, Stephanie Dombra, who does just that. She'll call on your behalf. She'll demand attention. And other things as well. And I want to be able to get to start a world of patient advocates. And those of you who know how to negotiate the systems, I want you to send me an email, because I'm going to put together a patient advocacy team. I want people who are effective at cutting through the red tape, who understand the system, who don't get outraged, but know how to work with the system. It's so necessary. It's especially necessary for the elderly. I mean, what do you do when you call on a telephone and you're kept on a hold and you go through all those buttons? You know, if you want to speak English, press 1, and then what's your account number from when you were 42? And then, you know, I mean, all of these prompts. And then finally you get on hold and then you get disconnected. What is that like? Well, you see, if I'm a patient advocate, I know how to deal with that. I feel perfectly fine about dialing back. I know how to get somebody on the phone. I know what to say. Those of you who are good at this, and you may have someone in your family who's good at them, put them on there. Don't put a rageful person on the phone, because that's not going to get you anywhere. When people on the other side who are delivering services hear rageful people, they lie to you, get you off the phone. But I'm looking for patient advocates, and I am looking for you to have patient advocacy. If you need it, if there is something that's going on with you medically, psychologically, and you need a patient advocate, meaning somebody who actually interferes for you, intervenes, calls the places, I will deliver that to you. I will find you the people. There is a Marty Resnick, who is a social worker, is effective at doing this, and she will be here today answering one of the phones. She's another one who will do it. The fees will be small. They'll just be paid for their time, but there won't be any $400 an hour cost, and there'll be no off-record costs. So patient advocate, this is a... There's a couple of people, one woman, Kelly Lonergan, unretired because she wanted to work again. And what she did was she unretired and she started a patient advocacy program in California. Wonderful thing. So it's necessary. This is Armand DeMille bringing you a concept that I want to see go into force, trying to get people to be a patient advocate. Some advocates tackle billing mistakes and insurance company rejections. That's tough stuff. That's more like being a bookkeeper. Others help in choosing doctors, offering guidance in treatment choices, assisting in locating a specialist or a hospital. They go with doctors sometimes. They go with the patients to the doctor's appointment. Don't you wish you could have that? Imagine you have a mother who's sick and you want to be able to do something for her. Don't you wish you had somebody who was really with medical know-how who went with her? It's worth a lot. We're putting that together. We're putting that together with the help of you, the radio station. If we get this right, we're going to be able to offer it as a course and be able to get people to become active patient advocates. And those of you who are retired, who think you have no use left in your life, maybe it's time to come out and join part of this team. Maybe you could do this for people. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue. 757-4488, 757-4488, 212-757-4488.
Can't give you anything but love, oh baby, ooh. That's the only thing I've plenty of, oh baby. Dream of wild, scheme of wild, wish your divine, baby, happiness, and I guess the best. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby, baby. Oh, diamond bracelet, Woolworth doesn't sell, my pretty baby butter. Till that lucky day, oh, the lucky day, you know darn well, oh, baby. Can't give you anything but
love. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. With you for 2 hours today, a two-hour special. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, associates, help you lead a more positively minded life. One of the things about the positive mind is sometimes you meet people who are so positive that they just seem wacky. Other times you see people who are so positive that they make you sick. And then there are times that you're just so happy to be around someone who has a positive attitude. And what is a positive attitude? Do we consider a positive attitude someone who is just peaceful and calm and nice? What about those earth shakers, those positive people who are so positive that they seem to move everything around them? If you are related to or married to or are one of the movers and shakers in the planet, and you're with somebody with a lot of activity and a lot of who succeed at things, who can do a lot of things, it's very tough. But if you recognize the bipolarity, the bipolar B, you're going to find it easier to deal with less expectations and a way to actually live with this in a successful way. Because the one thing we know about bipolar people is they get a lot of divorces.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's very rough to love somebody who's a cyclone. They're a force of nature.
Yeah, you know, a hurricane, that's right. I always see I always see that a high-flying bipolar patient tends to marry someone that goes along, and there's a balance. So, you know, the highly energetic person is complemented by a person that doesn't have that much energy. But if one bipolar marries another bipolar, it's the greatest love affair in the world. But the minute you sign that marital paper, crises begin. You know, it's hard to live with someone like yourself if you're flying here and flying there and doing this and doing 100 things. If you got another person doing the same thing in your household, it's very tough.
It's like two spinning tops.
Yeah.
And, the top could spin on its own and be beautiful, but when they touch each other, they jerk away you.
That's right. But when a bipolar falls in love, he doesn't want to fall in love with a slowpoke. He wants someone like himself. But when you sign that paper and get married, living with yourself is very rough.
Well, one of the things I've seen, Ronald, is that a bipolar, very often somebody who's manic, will look for somebody, like you said, who's on the other side, who's depressed, who becomes like an anchor.
You know what that is? I hate to use the word, but that's the medication. That's the lithium. The other person, the slower person, is the bipolar's medication. It slows them down,
We were talking about medication a little earlier. People medicate themselves, and they medicate their energies. A person who's depressed will often medicate themselves by drinking coffee or by choosing a relationship with somebody who fires them, who keeps their fire alive, who challenges them. And it's a way of adjusting your chemistry.
High stimulus addiction, I like to call it, The person is depressed. Instead of going to get treatment or take a drug or do psychotherapy, you have high stimulus addictive personalities in your life that sort of give you the equivalent of an antidepressant.
The manic depressive is perfect. The manic depressive 2 is perfect for that. The bipolar 2 is perfect for that because they are so stimulating,
yeah.
So exciting, so fiery, so wild. It promises to keep you going for a long period
absolutely.
Of time.
Yeah.
How do you think, Dr. Fevey, how do you think bipolarity interfaces, and before you respond to it, I'll tell you why I'm asking the question, with psychopathy. And the reason I ask this is the following. I have a feeling that somebody who is this kind of a mover and a shaker, this energetic person, I don't think they're bad people. I don't think that they are, that they're using people as much as just spinning in their own world. Whereas the psychopath, the narcissist, the person who is really using people who may have a high energy is more destructive almost by intention, because they don't care about people. So the high-fired salesman could be manic, or he could be a psychopath, or he could be both. How much psychopathy do you see in manic depression? And it's a big question,
this is a very
ask the professional.
No, it's an excellent question. My basic answer is that I think this is an area of research that needs to be done, because with all of the recent classification of the bipolar spectrum over the last 20 years, we've ignored psychopathy. These people, we say they're liars, they're cheaters, they commit felonies, they go to prison. But we don't know the interaction of these two groups of people. And I think there's a tremendous overlap, because the bipolar patient becomes highly manipulative, when they're not manipulating the slot machines, they're manipulating people. And how does this move over into the area of psychopathy, where some bipolars are doing fraudulent things with billions of dollars of money on Wall Street? These people, oftentimes appear in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. They come in handcuffs, and someone says, he was diagnosed by a psychiatrist as bipolar. But he's this high-flying, successful Wall Street tycoon that has gone too far. Now, how does that intersect with psychopathy? And then with psychopathy, you get into rage and murder and, a whole spectrum of things. So this is an uncharted field now that demands more research on the part of psychologists and psychiatrists, psychiatric researchers in the next decade.
There's a diagnostic tool that you use when trying to study whether or not a person would be considered bipolar. You ask about hospitalization or the near hospitalization. Could you describe that?
Yes. Well, it's one thing for a person to say they've been moody. They're moody. That's part of the normal personality, to have mild ups and downs that are based on the reactions to the vicissitudes of life. So that's normal moods. But when we get into a high, angry, or euphoric mood where psychosis creeps in and the person is delusional, he thinks he's Jesus Christ, or he feels the world is against him, he's persecuted, and he's got a shotgun loaded in his place. This type of high, psychotic, manic has to be hospitalized. And if they're not hospitalized, they should have been hospitalized. Now, if you get a history from the patient or the family of hospitalization due to this high-flying, manic, psychotic, paranoid, or euphoric delusional state, that gets them into the label or psychiatric classification as bipolar 1 if they've had some depressions too. But it's the manic, severe mania that causes the diagnosis bipolar 1.
And when you say or should have been hospitalized, because in many cultures they don't want to go near doctors, they don't trust the culture, so they don't trust the environment.
Here in New York City, I would wager that of every manic hospitalized for manic psychosis, there are three or four that wrote it out at home with the doctor prescribing major doses of tranquilizers or not going to the doctor and the wife sitting it out and getting beaten up. But somehow, and it goes away. It doesn't last forever.
Or they drink alcohol.
They go into a stupor.
They self-medicate until it passes by.
Self-medication. But three out of four that should have been hospitalized for manic behavior, severe, are sitting it out, not going to the hospital, and avoiding. Of course, in other cultures which don't have sophisticated hospitalizations like we do, it's much more than that. Most people don't go in at all. And of course, a lot of accidents happen. Sometimes these people are accidentally killed or get into rages and, you know, kill someone else.
So we have two different – this is Armand DeMille. We're speaking with Dr. Ronald Fevey, who released a book called Bipolar 2, which is about the people who are not as severely extreme in their bipolarity, that they have both the manic and the depressive part, but these are the earth movers. These are the people who you see much more in everyday life. And then we have one more condition, which I guess we should talk about, which is bipolar 3, which is just to mention it, which is one we created.
Yeah, this is an interesting condition. It's diagnosed in the psychiatrist's office in a patient who recently was put on an antidepressant. It could be Prozac, it could be Zoloft, it could be Wellbutrin, any of the antidepressants, and suddenly went into a high for the first time in their life being given an antidepressant. Now, the way you diagnose this is you look, first of all, at the past history of this person. Were there highs in the past? Were there mood swings in the past that never were severe enough to go to get attention by a psychiatrist? Or was there a family history? A typical manic depressive family history would include a relative that suicided, a relative treated for depression, a relative alcoholic or drug abuse, or outstanding achievement in this genetic history family. If you find that, or if you find a past history of bipolar, mild moods that never even had attention by a doctor, and someone comes along and treats this person for depression for the first time, and they go into a high, we call that bipolar 3. It's caused by the antidepressant in a genetically vulnerable person for bipolar in the family tree.
So there's a person who's got the potential for it, has never manifested it, but it just still appear because you gave him one of these dynamo medications that do this thing, you know, trigger it off. So just going back, if a person has bipolar 2, we say that there's a kind of a mild euphoria, there's a euphoria that's powerful at the point where the person loses a lot of sleep. Right, when you're down to 2 or 3 hours a day, we're now going from bipolar 2 suspecting
bipolar 1.
Right?
Yeah. Now, most of the time, the bipolar 2s remain true. They usually don't switch back and forth to bipolar 1 and 2. Now, once you are a bipolar 1, once you've had one psychiatric hospitalization for mania, you're a bipolar 1 your whole life.
Even if it's mild later
If all the rest of them are mild. So you don't convert usually from a bipolar 1 to a bipolar 2. You're always a bipolar 1. The bipolar 2s can, you know, maybe with alcohol or certain stresses in their lives or drugs, go from a mild high that's being extremely useful and creative to that person, the family, and the society, to getting tipped off to a crazy psychotic high where they're sleeping 3 hours and then going off the deep end.
So now once they do that, can't they come back to their bipolar two? They're
basically bipolar twos that have been tripped off by something like a drug or something in the environment that have converted them into that severe episode. But usually they go back to the mild episodes.
So now wait, once you've been hospitalized, you're a bipolar one forever,
yep.
Unless you've been a two who got hospitalized
exactly.
Because of a stressor, and then you go back to being a two.
Exactly, exactly.
So once falling off and spinning out into
right.
space doesn't necessarily mean you're gone forever.
If you have a history of all of these enormous energy, charm, you have a, you know, you're a fairly well-adjusted person in society and great success, You're basically a bipolar II patient, and you know, can you have a severe setback so you go into the category of bipolar I? Yes, by virtue of something happening in the society. But genetically, if you're bipolar II, a mild person, you don't go into a sudden delusional psychotic state like the bipolar ones do. They breed true most of their lifetimes.
This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about people with high energy, positive people, people who are the earth movers, which we are calling bipolar II, according to Dr. Ronald Fevey. Great contribution here. I want to talk about that because although you and I know what we're talking about, we talk about family history. Let's slow it down a little and talk about it. That one of the things you want to do, if you're a therapist out there and you're looking to diagnose bipolarity, you must check history. Now, it's amazing how few do it, how few look at the history. Look at the clues we get from history. So, Dr. Fevey, what are the clues that the history tells you?
You know, this is an incredible situation because I remember in my training and work at Columbia in the 1960s, psychiatrists didn't take family histories, you know, and they made a diagnosis in terms of what the patient demonstrated in front of you. Now, if you don't have a person that was psychotic and manic and all the delusional things in front of you, they didn't diagnose it as manic depressive. They didn't look into the past history in detail, and they didn't go to the family history. Now, we know today, any therapist out there that's doing an initial evaluation should take a detailed family history, and that the family history of bipolars, 70% to 80% of the time has the following in it. And I'm talking about first, second, third degree relatives. You see alcoholism. You see drug addiction. You see a history. Oh, Aunt Mame went to a psychiatrist for depression and got an antidepressant. You see suicide in the family, but also you see outstanding achievement. Now, that's the genetic spectrum in the family history, and you got to get that on your initial interview as a doctor.
So we would ignore genetic, we would ignore success. We would say, like I remember Seward, you know, from Seward's Folly, his grandson, he had a grandson, and his grandson invented the pop tops from beer cans, you know, those little mm-hmm. tops. So he's an achiever. You look into his history, his grandfather certainly was an achiever, and his children had the same kind of energy going along. And you're saying the following: just as important as hospitalization, just as important as alcoholism, is high achievement. It's a signal. It's a sign.
It's a signal. There may be a mild form of the bipolar there, a bipolar two or a bipolar two beneficial. Yes.
And sometimes it could be bipolar one who's achieving something like becoming a musician and getting
exactly.
discovered and being graced through the world just because they're crazy enough that everybody's feeding the craziness.
You know, absolutely.
Everybody loves it.
Yep, yep.
So you can have a fully psychotic bipolar person succeeding in life because the world is ready for it.
And then if they add drugs or alcohol to it, it gets even more weird and crazy, you see.
And it looks bizarre, but because it looks bizarre, it's welcomed.
Yeah, exactly.
In some way. And we say, oh, let's celebrate that person.
But what about the 4 and 5 and 5.5 hour people? These are the people that are the bipolar twos. Now, this doesn't ring through 100% of the time, but it is my favorite first question for diagnosing bipolar II. They don't need sleep. the way the other group in this country does. You know, the normal, so-called normal, they call them, the bipolar twos call us laggards, you know. If we need to stay in bed 7, 8, 9 hours a night, they are much against that. They don't need that. They get up on 4 or 5 and go about all of their activities. They have high energy and not the need for sleep that the rest of the world. These are the two most important things.
Huh. Why do you think that people don't sleep as much? Why do you think? Do you think that they're so wound that their metabolism is so?
I think it's part of the whole genetic endowment that is handed down from one generation to the next. And why is sleep involved in that? Well, you know, the sleep centers in the hypothalamus, along with the eating center and the sex center and the center for mood. So these are all affected in bipolar illness. You know, for instance, if you want to just take a look at the symptoms in depression, they're hopeless, helpless, worthless, the mood symptoms. You gain weight or lose weight. That's the appetite food center. You sleep excessively or sleep less. So all of these are tied up in one area of the brain. So the sleep center is in that same area, and it is similarly affected in the bipolar patient.
So you don't sleep as much, you know, and one of the things that we're going to do in a short while, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a lot more. We've got a lot to talk about when it comes to relationships and sex, too, because there's a great deal of how this, the bipolar 2, manifests sexually and how it's affected sexually. But I'm also curious about the about most people who ignore treatment. And what happens when they do? I mean, if a person doesn't, I mean, why would you go to therapy if you feel that good?
That's right.
You're feeling good. Why would you go to therapy? Because you've got a friend who says, you know, my buddy, I'm your pal. And, you know, I could tell you're a little manic and you're going this way. It would be not a bad idea for you to go to a treatment because why? Give me a reason to tell a bipolar 2 that it would be not a bad idea for them to seek treatment.
There is no good reason if you're feeling well and you're performing normally in your life and you're not hurting other people. For instance, if you're a bipolar 2 and you are extending yourself too far and you're coming home 11, 12 o'clock at night because you're getting too caught up in the machinations of money dealings, and you start getting a little fraudulent, and you're home late at night, and your wife and family are worried about you, and still, you know, you talk pretty sensibly, you still have quite a bit of money in the bank, but, you know, the behavior has changed, and the wife sees this, and she says, well, I think you ought to go to the doctor. He says, well, you know, I'm doing very well. I'm feeling well. Why should I do this? It's very hard to talk a person into that. And particularly, this person may also be taking a little more alcohol now to soothe the thing. So it's very hard to give them insight when they're feeling so well. So what happens is that if they fall into the depressed phase, then you can get them to go to the doctor, the psychiatrist. But they're very hard to get to if you're doing better than everyone else.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue.
This is Julian Joiello, and you've been listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM. The phone number is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. And we're asking for your help. Call the number 212-757-4488 to make a donation. And there's a couple premiums today that we have for you. There's the $100 premium, which is 3 CDs on emotional fragility. And there's going to be some selections by Armand personally from some previous shows that are really, really interesting, a few of which are The Nature of Crying, The Neuropsychology of Fear, and The Seeds of Violence. Just a couple of things, and there's more than that. And we're gonna hand select it and engineer it for you guys and send it out immediately. And that's a $100 donation. and that goes straight to WBAI and making sure that WBAI can keep paying the salaries at WBAI and continue providing you guys with programs that really make sure that life is good. And another premium along with that is the $200 premium. And this $200 premium gets you a consultation with Armand DeMille, a meeting with a man that you respect, you listen to, and you get to sit down with him or on the phone and talk to him about what you feel, what you want to know, what you want to know about yourself, what you want to know about the world, about life. The phone number is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. And this is just personal time for you and him to talk, to just connect with each other and learn. You can bring in your significant other and work things out with them. You can bring your daughter, your son, a family member, or give this to a family member. This could be a great gift for any family member who you feel like needs some time to really be introspective and learn about themselves. So that's $200, and it goes straight to WBAI, and along with that consultation with Armand, upon walking into the DeMille Center over on 57th Street, you'll be getting a book from his library. You can open up the library and choose a book that you'd like. We've got books about the brain, about love, anything you can imagine. And they're all books by great authors that we've interviewed on the show in the past. And also, finally, a CD of music handpicked by Armand. And this is all going to come along with the $200 consultation with Armand DeMille. So it's worth it. The phone number is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. Now, by donating, you can donate $100 for the CDs, the 3-CD set about emotional fragility. You can donate $200 for the consultation with Armand, which will be a great thing. Or you can donate $25 or $500 or $10,000. And all this will go directly to WBAI. And we're going to be answering the phones here at Armand's center here, the DeMille Center, and we'll be answering your calls directly. So there's no call center. It's directly to us. We figured, you know, we need to take a stronghold of what's going on here, and we'll be answering your calls, and you'll be talking directly to the people here, the team at the DeMille Center, and we're excited to hear from you, and we want your donations to help WBAI and keep them afloat, because they need it. They're listener supported only. The stuff they make is for you, and it's supported by you, and this is the month to remember that. So call now, 212-757-4488. I'm Julian Joiello, and it's $100 for the 3 CDs on emotional fragility, nature of crying, tricky memories, significance, and paranoia, the seeds of violence. Doesn't that sound interesting? Don't you want to hear more about it? Well, there's going to be 3 CDs if you pay $100 to donate to WBAI. Also, $200 again for the consultation with Armand. And it's really, really worth it. You get so much from this consultation. It's not only that book or the CD of music handpicked by Armand, by the way, but you get to sit down. You get to come in here, sit on the couch in Armand's office, and have a real heart-to-heart. Ask a question of somebody that you've been listening to, the man that you respect, and he respects you too. And you're coming in, and he's going to answer you as fully as he can. And that's something that's really invaluable. And right now we're putting a price on it. It's a donation for WBAI. It's 212-757-4488. Call now. 212-757-4488.
That's 212-757-4488. The very talented Julian Joiello speaking to you. Doesn't he have a lovely voice? This is a man destined to be an actor and a producer. He's a movie maker, and he comes from good stock. We have Aunt Barbara in common. You know, imagine we're shouting out to Aunt Barbara today. What a wonderful thing.
I wonder if we can find our way to her with,
you know,
this program.
We will.
Yeah.
We will. She's such a lovely lady in my life. I remember her when I was a kid. Great. Great. Julian, so yes, we're telling people to do this thing because they have to do it, because they have to understand themselves, because the unexamined brain is unexamined and does unexamined stupid things. I mean, that's all that doing silly things is. It's a brain that doesn't look at itself. Let's look at what happened in Boston. Let's take a look at that. Are these examined brains? These are two kids who get together, two guys get together. Now, I don't know.
19 and 27,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going on, but it's a brother and his brother, and he's saying, oh, my big brother has got this thing, and he mm-hmm. has an axe to grind, and I have an axe to grind. Now, maybe they were trained by the Russians. Maybe they were sent over by the Chechens, you know. Maybe they were, who knows what's behind it. Maybe it was CIA. You know, I can't tell. I don't know the true story. However, the person who executes the thing has to have a specific thing in their bones. They have to be absent of feelings. They have to be absent of compassion. They have to be absent of caring what happens to other people. How do you get that way? It's the riddle of the human species. The task of understanding humanity is too important and too daunting to leave to just speculation. People are understandable. You could see it. You could see it in their eyes. I could tell you who is capable of doing it. I know people who are psychiatrically
Is that the whole thing on this?
Sure.
Task of understanding humanity?
The task of understanding humanity is too important and too daunting to leave unexamined. You know, we have to look at things. And I know people who are capable of doing horrendous things, but they look like the sweetest person in the world. A psychopath. Now, this will be among the emotional fragility CDs that we send you. A person who's a psychopath is so hard to see. They just have no conscience. And you can't tell, because they show a lot of love, they show a lot of caring, they show a lot of sincerity. They're such nice boys, Now, adolescence is supposed to be a time of psychopathy, meaning that it's somewhere in you growing up as a kid. You know, you get so overshadowed by guilt and shame, and they tell you God is going to judge you, your mother's going to judge you, your father's going to judge you. You're so filled with feeling responsible for everybody that if you don't continue that, if you decide you have to break out of it, one of three things is going to happen. If you have to break out of it, either you become a converted caretaker, as many people I know have become, all they do is care about making you happy. That's one, and they give up their lives. Or you become somebody who refuses to care about anybody, and for that we have two routes. One route you could take is drugs. Take chemicals, absolutely. Smoke dope, drink, you take acid, or better yet, cocaine. Cocaine frees you of any sense of responsibility. That's what crack is all about. That's what cocaine is all about. You lose the sense of responsibility. If you ever see somebody shoot up with heroin, you watch the first minutes as the heroin enters their veins, and they have this magnificent, beautiful, beatific sense comes over their face. Like, I've come home. I'm free. Free of all that burden I've been carrying around. We have to understand that people carry this in their mind. And when people don't have any chance to be able to express it, to show it, to feel it, and they don't have anybody who's interested in understanding it, they just get more and more hardened. Now, the other way out of feeling sense of responsibility is to turn off all shame, turn off all guilt. And in doing that, what you say to yourself is, I don't care about you. I'm going to show you all of the affection. Imagine you were a car salesman, or you were selling something to somebody, and you were going to sell it to them, and what you do is you show them, I love your painting that you have in your room. Oh, I love the makeup you have. Or the typical doctor who goes around telling middle-aged women or women who are in their advanced age that they have the parts of a 16-year-old. All of this seductibility, all of this stuff that you want to do to seduce somebody into giving you your money, giving you their money, or to seduce somebody into not paying attention to you. So sure, these boys up in Boston decided that they would do something, and they did something that was so, but without a remorse. Without a remorse. There is no remorse. So what do we want to do? Kill them? Kill the boy? Right? Let's shoot him. Let's take away every one of his rights. Let's just shoot him. Let's kill him. Let's squash him. Let's make him not exist because of what he did. Or let's understand him. Let's find out what's going on here. Are we producing the very same thing in our military? Do we take people and conscript them into the military, send them overseas, train them to be psychopaths, tell them you got to kill when you got to kill, because remember, your only loyalty is to your brothers, meaning your fellow soldiers. And then we send them over there, and we send them over there, and they got to go kill and fewer people, and they, you know, do things to people and send bombs and everything else. And then they come back. And suddenly they re-enter the zone of feeling shame. Is there any wonder we are having such post-traumatic stress disorder? What have we done to these soldiers to train them to give up their mind and then have them come back and try to reclaim their mind, and they can't do it? So we give them drugs and we give them alcohol, but what are most of them doing? What is the largest number ever in the history of the military doing? They are committing suicide, the highest number of suicide rate ever after return of soldiers. What have we done? We've taught them to not feel. We bring them back and they feel. And they have been talked out of it because now feeling is like being disloyal. Being sensitive is like being disloyal. So a number of people work with these problems of post-traumatic stress disorder. And what are they missing? How come these people keep killing themselves? They're missing the fact that you turned off their feelings. You shut them down. Now, maybe that's the only way to create them, because we really want to create robots to send into war, don't we? We want to have, you know, planes flying over with nobody in them and so on and so forth. So we're speculating with turning people into robots. And by training them in a certain kind of way, you robotize them, and then you bring them back. And who comes back? A shell.
We already even do that. Drone strikes.
That's what a drone is.
We have robots. They're actual robots with cameras on them that they can send in there by remote control.
Sure, that's the ideal. That's the goal. They think.
And that's the future. That's the modern technology. That's soldiers are getting. It's like the past or something, you know?
Isn't it going to be a funny thing? It's going to be a funny thing, but we don't know what we lose for that, because now the robots don't feel, of course. And the robots can destroy anything, and the people that they go after, because we've got the high techs. Since we have the robots and the little country over there doesn't, we send them into Rwanda, you know, and we say, okay, clean out those bad guys, and they'll kill people without feelings. And the drones kill without feelings. So we're not really removing ourselves. We're not really unpsychopathing ourselves. We're further psychopathing ourselves by having a gun that's out of arm, that can't shoot back. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So what I'm asking us to do is to look at ourselves and to understand ourselves. I want you to understand yourself. A man came in earlier today. He's got two children. This couple came in where the woman and the man had switched roles. The man was the mother to the children, and the woman was the man to the children, was the father. And she acted like her father. She was behaving like her father, and she was treating him like he was a mother. He was a caring, giving guy. He was doing the nurturing. And I thought about that. That's okay. You could have that in a relationship. That works. However, for their children, it didn't work, because the very reason they became the way they did was because they didn't have defined roles by their parents. She didn't have a mother she could love. She only had a father she could love. He didn't have a father he could love. He only had a mother he could love. So he became the mother and she became the father. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, they've got four kids. How do you think these four kids are going to see models of the future? What are they going to be looking for? How are they going to become? Do I say they should take shame in that? No, those four kids will do fine. They'll do fine. They're just going to be confused. However, if the parents decided instead to straighten out their own relationships with themselves so that the man could be include the man that he is as part of his being and not reject it, and if the woman could accept the woman that she is and not just become the male part of herself, if they could both do that, then the children get whole parents and not confused with their sexual identity or their identity of any kind. So getting to understand yourself is such an essentially beautiful behavior. It's a thing you could do. You don't want to miss this boat. You don't want somebody to tell you who you are. You want somebody to show you a way to find who you are. That's what I think therapy really is. You know, you go to physical therapy. One of the things you do if you go to a physical therapist and you got a bad leg, he has you exercise your leg. He doesn't exercise your leg for you. He has you lift weights. He doesn't lift the weights for you. A real therapist doesn't tell you who you are. They show you how to find who you are. They show you how to lift your own weights, how to take off your own mask, how to discover yourself. So going to somebody who just tells you over and over again who you are, you know, well, that's the way you are because you're like this and you're like this. That's not therapy. Therapy, the repair. And the repair is you repairing yourself. So in that direction, I would like you to consider doing whatever you can to find about yourself. And while we've got the positive mind here on WBAI, every one of these programs, all the archives, are meant just for that. It's your education. It's your university on the air. And it's happened. We now have on the website how many, Julian? How many?
We've got 1,500 new visitors every week.
1,500 new visitors every week. And we have something like about, oh, I don't know, 1,000 programs up there for you to listen to. I mean, it's endless.
Join the 1,500.
Yeah. 212-757-4488. You can send these, you know, we put the articles, we put the programs on air so that you can hear a piece, listen to it. If you're any good at GarageBand, you can cut up little pieces and send them out. You can make clips of the pieces. You can attach them to photographs if you'd like. I've noticed I've heard myself quoted everywhere.
Make a greeting card with Armand's voice in it, telling you about your mind.
Hey, you got a beautiful mind. Just take that clip, right? Hey there, happy birthday. You've got a wonderful mind. All right, that's going to become a clip.
That'd be a cool surprise.
That'd be a cool surprise. So 212-757-4488 for a $200 donation. You get a chance to come in. Meet with me, do it by phone or in person, and we will set that up for you right away. Now, keep in mind, don't wait for us to call you. You make the donation, and then call us and make the appointment. Don't wait on us, because we're gonna try to reach you, but sometimes the phones are broken, sometimes we get the wrong number. We're going to have four people standing by, six lines. The lines are already lit, 212-757-4488. 212-8. I'll take that call too. 212-757-4488. We've been able to actually complete because I do not see ongoing clients. I rarely see ongoing clients. So all I do is consultations. And I've gotten enough paid for by people that I don't need to get the money that you give to WBAI. This $200 rate is a deeply, deeply discounted rate. I usually charge at least 50% more than that to see me for a consultation, but I'm doing it because I want the invitation to go out to you. I want to get you excited about meeting yourself. It's an introduction of you to you. 212-757-4488. You can give it to somebody else. You know, you look at your wife. Look at your husband. Honey, let's go visit that guy, Armand. Let's see if we could do something that makes our lives a little better. Unfortunately, I may find that there's something under the rock that hasn't been overturned, and I would have to tell you, but mostly I want to give you exactly what you want, which is a one-time meeting so that you could learn something about yourself that you don't know. Ask the question. What is it about you that you don't understand? Why am I? See where that takes you. 212-757-4488 for a $100 donation if you want to get some CDs. We're compiling a thing called Emotional Fragility, which are just information about different fragile states of mind and then how that might be, it's going to be good to listen to and good to have as well. If you know any emotionally fragile people, as we all do or as you may be, this will be of use to you. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. My friends, this is Armand DeMille sitting in with Julian Joiello and others. We'll be back in a second.
I had a consultation with Armand DeMille, and from the moment I walked into the room, I felt like I knew I was safe and that I was going to learn something which was actually going to change my life. Armand took a walk through my mind and through my heart and somehow knew very well how to put up lights for me to follow to find my way back to me, the best me.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. But right now in our studio, a gift, Dr. Ronald Fevey, who is one of the world's leading authorities on a number of things, including depression and the bipolar disorder. And one of the things I wanted to talk about with Dr. Fevey is about the sexuality of the bipolar too, because it's probably one of the most obvious signs. You see it in hypersexuality. You see it in a form of sexuality. I think bipolar 2 people are sexy people, don't you think, Dr. Fevey?
Yes. One of the characteristics, things that they talk about on the first interview that I have with them, the evaluation interview, is that they have an unusually high sexual desire or libido since they went into this higher phase. Now, you know, we're talking about bipolar as a, it doesn't go on 12 months of the year in most people. It's 2 weeks, it's 4 weeks, it's maybe 2 months, the high, and then there, you go back to a normal level, or then you go into a low. But the mild bipolar, the hypomanic patient or person, says they don't need as much sleep as other people do. They have enormous energy. They are more talkative, they're more creative, and they have a high sexual desire or libido that is primed to go all the time.
Does, to me, sex with the bipolar 2 is like alcohol and almost no different. It's like it's a chemical. It's like I'm going to change my chemistry to feel better. What do you think?
Well, you know, I also think this means that we have to take a good look at our old concept of nymphomania, don't you?
I mean, oh, my
you know,
gosh.
I mean,
of course,
are these so-called nymphomania, this is a diagnosis, you know, from the beginning of this century. Are these people that really bipolar twos? Because nymphomaniacs were not crazy people. They just had a continuous obsession about sex, and they couldn't get enough of it, and man after man after man. And now I think we got to look at these people, look at their personal histories, their family histories. Many of these certainly were bipolar two people, undiagnosed until today when we have a new nomenclature, a new lookout on this whole thing.
My guest. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Ronald Fevey, what a fun guy.
Hi, this is Julian Joiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student at NYU, and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going, and the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted Free Speech Radio. Go to the website, WBAI.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
If you would donate to the station $200, you will get a chance to meet with me personally or talk to me on the phone about anything you want to talk about. 212-757-4488 is our number here. 212-757-4488. We're taking the calls right here, as opposed to at a call center, because I believe I have my people who are standing by ready to answer the phones. And if we're going to make these donations possible and we're going to make this happen, I want to have the people who are answering the phone who can take your calls and they know all about our system. 212-757-4488. That's the office of that's the number of my office. And it is our people who are standing by. You'll hear Jamie Ross. You'll hear Marty Resnick, you'll hear Teresa Palmer, a number of people who will be answering these calls. Lisa Arnone will be taking these calls just to help you out and to get this through. 212-757-4488. Now, for this, you get a number of things. You'll get a one-time meeting with me. You will get a surprise choice of book. We have a thing. We have a library full of books that were donated to me, given to me by people who want to get on the air, you know. And they give us books, and we look through them. Some people get on the air, some don't. We have those books available, like a library. You could pick a book. You'll take a choice of your own book. They're out in the waiting room. You'll take a choice. You'll have that book as well. That's a little bonus. An additional bonus is going to be, when you come in, I'm going to give you a copy of a CD of music that I'm going to create for you. I'm going to put together something. It'll be either jazz or a combination of things. But you're going to hear some music. And you know me and my music. So we've got a number of things being offered. $200 you get, but the main thing you're going to get is a consultation with me and then goodies when you walk in the door. 212-757-4488. Now, let me talk to the people who have donated in the past. We did a fund drive a couple of months ago, and a couple of months ago, we offered some CDs. We offered Hate, the one about hatred, the feeling of hatred, and we offered Human Sexuality, two different CD sets. Because of something that took place with WBAI, the addresses of the donors can't be sorted out yet, because BAI went into a major move at that period of time. All you have to do is call my office, tell them you donated in the last fund drive, and we will send you the CDs. That's all. We just send them to you. That's it. We have them here. They're ready to package. We have your name, but we don't have the addresses. So call, say you made the donation, we'll check off your name, boom, we'll mail it out to you ourselves. My apologies. It took too long. I usually do not leave it up to WBAI to deliver premiums. I like to deliver them myself. As far as the consultation goes, that's a real easy one because I could deliver that right here. So if you have not had the consultation call, we thought we called everybody and offered them a consultation, but if you haven't gotten it from a previous call, call our office now, 212-757-4488. Say, I donated during the last fund drive. We'll find your name, and boom, we'll give you an appointment right away. 212-757-4488. We are going to offer an additional premium today, a new one. We're going to register it. This one is called Emotional Fragility. I'm going to put together three CDs for a donation of $100. And these three CDs are going to contain information about tricky memories, memories that kind of send you off to the edges sometimes, how you could shed the past, talk about the nature of crying, the nature of being ostracized. I'm going to talk about bipolarity, which I'll be talking about later in this program as well. I'm going to talk about manic love, powerlessness, managing chronic pain, emotions that you hate, what makes violence, social fears. All of these are going to be combined into a 3-CD set. They're going to be jammed together. We're going to take pieces of information like we're doing today. I'm going to just shove them all together next to each other, and you'll learn about many different subjects. There might be a nice gift for you to give to people. 212-757-4488. The 3 CDs called Emotional Fragility, which you get right here. 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. You can make a donation with MasterCard, Visa, American Express. You can give us promissory notes, you know, but the trouble with those is rather than, unless you don't have a credit card, it's just so much easier for us if we get the credit card stamp right away. Then that money gets immediately applied. Whereas if you're going to send a check, we'll handle that as well. 212-757-4488.
Hi, I'm Audrey Clark, and I'm from Guyana. I've been working with Armand DeMille for over 2 years. Support the station. They bring you news and information from around the world that you can't get anywhere else. You can donate any amount by calling 212-757-4488. Show your support for the Positive Mind, WBAI, by calling 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488 to make your contribution.
We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org or you can go to thepositivemind.com where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends.
Just don't work on you. Got my mojo working, buddy. Just don't break on you. I wanna love you so bad till I don't know what to do. I'm going down in Louisiana to get me a mojo. Mojo, hey. I'm gonna have all you women wretch under my command. Got my mojo working. Got my mojo working. Got my mojo working. Got my mojo working. Got my mojo working, buddy. Just don't break on you. Let me say.
212-757-4488. 212-757-4488.
212-757-4488.
Two one two seven five seven four four eight eight.
212-757-4488.
The phone number is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488.
I got a gypsy woman giving me advice. I got a gypsy woman giving me advice. I got a whole lot of tricks keeping here all night. Got my mojo waking. Got my mojo.
what it just don't worry you gonna do. What my phone's on waking. Just don't work on you. You want me to sing a little more, Joe, or something else now?